Today is November 26, 2024. Global average temperatures are 1.2 degrees higher than before the industrial area. Yesterday, 73% of Germany's electricity demand was met by renewable energy sources. 7% of Germany's land area is affected by droughts, and the sea level has risen by 25 centimeters since 1880. In the past 25 years, about 3.3 trillion tons of ice have been lost in the West Antarctica. Yeah, in this podcast, I'm welcoming Paulina and Fabian. Thank you guys for coming here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Why didn't you introduce yourself? Like, first of all, why are you here in Germany, coming from the Antarctica?
Yeah, so I guess we should start at the beginning briefly. So we met through an Antarctic expedition, and Paulina originally did an amazing Antarctic expedition to the South Pole, which I'll let her, you know, mention in a second. And we were going to this Antarctic expedition. I was fundraising for it for a good couple of years, and so was she. And at that point, we realized we had this sort of mutual bond about doing something wider with impact, and we settled on the topic of carbon removal, and we decided to build something around that. But the funny thing is, with the Antarctic expedition, where we were supposed to meet for the first time in person, I got COVID literally two days before the expedition. Yeah, well, it was literally 2 days before my flight, and I'd spent 4 years fundraising for it. So I was very depressed, but I managed to go next year. But that is how we originally met. But then, yeah, so Paulina, you go ahead with
how you got started. I originally went on this expedition, which was on a boat with like 80 different people from 40 different countries, and it was all about climate change. And 2 years later, I walked to the South Pole, and our team tested out renewable energy, and I went with 8 men. I was 19. It took me 2 years to fundraise. It was like minus 40 degrees, super arduous, super intense. And I like fell in love with nature. But when I got back, I felt very empty because it's all these climate expeditions. They're amazing. They're super fun. They're super inspiring. When you're there, you meet people, you get a sense of community. But when you come back, there's not many tangible things that you can do. And a lot of it is just talk. And so I was talking about this with Fabian, and I was like, what can we do that's real? I have all this inspiration, all this momentum from going to Antarctica. But besides talking about what we've seen, because we literally have seen climate change before our eyes, like, what can we do? And so Fabian had the crazy idea of saying, well, let's make a film about carbon removal and real solutions. And that's how we got here.
That's great.
Yeah.
How was your personal start with the whole climate change issue? Like, how did it came across, or was at the Antarctica the first time?
For me, I just wanted to go to Antarctica. I was so young, and
just in general.
And it was an expedition that was, it was organized by this man called Robert Swan, who was the first person to ever walk to the North and South Pole.
That's amazing.
And when he did it, his eyes changed color because there was a hole on top of the ozone. There was a hole in the ozone layer on top of Antarctica. And the ozone made him, what is the condition called when your eyes change color? Cataracts, I think. And he came back with white eyes, and it was proof that, you know, the earth was getting damaged. And so he then decided to dedicate his entire life to talking about this issue, because at the time nobody was talking about climate change. And so he organized these expeditions that were focused on adventure and Antarctica, but also with like a lens of climate change. And it was through that I got interested in it. But originally I just wanted it to
be a vacation in the Antarctica.
I wanted to be an explorer and go to Antarctica. And then, I don't know, it's kind of like a moral dilemma, because we're so privileged and lucky to have been there, and it took us so much work and so much time, but it is like, you know, you are emitting a lot of carbon just by going to Antarctica. And so, when we got back, we went in different times, but when I got back from my expedition, I that's when I met Fabian, and I was like, I feel really guilty, and I don't think going somewhere and talking about it is significant enough. Like, let's do something real. And he was like, well, have you heard about carbon removal? And I didn't know a thing.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I guess we sort of both had sort of different avenues into climate. I mean, Paulina's is a very exciting avenue. Mine started off a bit boring. I was studying accounting and finance at university, which I thought I wanted to do. And I found out I didn't want to do it after 1 year of studying it. I was incredibly bored and depressed. I mean, obviously it's for some people. It wasn't for me personally. And I really had a bit of an existential crisis. And I felt like I really wanted to do something which has some impact or purpose. So I dropped out of my accounting degree and switched into an environment degree at my university.
And it was still in London, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I was in at the London School of Economics, yeah. And my course was super small. It was only like 8 people on it. And it was funny because as I was studying my course, I was really, we were taught about carbon removal. And originally it was framed as this sort of sci-fi geoengineering.
Future thing.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, oh, we can't rely on it too much. You know, it's an excuse to, you know, continue polluting emissions. But then I saw the climate curves in terms of how steeply we would have to drop emissions in order to remain below 1.5 or 2 degrees of warming. And something just clicked that I realized it's going to be physically impossible at the rate of our current economy and our decarbonization rate. It's going to be impossible to decarbonize in time without the use of things like carbon removal in addition. So I was already hooked. I was like, okay, carbon removal is sick. This is something we've got to look into more. It was very exciting. But weirdly enough, everyone on my course still hated it. They at that time, it really wasn't that popular. And it was a bit fringe. And they thought, no, that's ridiculous. It's continue, you know, polluting emissions. And that kind of made me want to go into it more. I was like, no, I'm going to prove you guys wrong. And that's and that challenge was the accepted. Time we met. Yeah, exactly. Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
And that was the time we met. And you also, we both had that similar feeling of...
Frustration, almost.
Frustration, exactly, with all of our peers at university and a lot of our friends had very defeatist and sort of doom and gloom attitudes around climate change. That there's nothing we can do. Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do. And we were both like, we have to try to do something. Like we were like, someone's got to try.
Because the man that I mentioned from Antarctica connected us.
Yeah.
And so we met on Zoom and I had just come back from the South Pole, which was something that I had worked for 2 years, came back with like a burnt nose, like, like super intense. And then all of a sudden after this big high, there's like, what's next?
Mm.
And, everyone was like, well, you should talk about your experience to like, promote climate change.
Yeah.
And it just felt so meaningless and so performative. And I try to, you know, engage in sustainability activities all across campus, all across school. Like I wanted to do something. And it was like, everything seemed, as I said, performative or I'm not trying to be condescending because I'm sure there's great work out there, but it was just, for me at least, it just felt like nothing was working towards anything tangible or scalable or real solutions. And it was all about, let's complain about this. Let's point fingers at this.
Yeah.
It wasn't about coming together. And that's why when Fabian told me what carbon removal was,
I saw the chance.
I was like, this is so cool. Like maybe not all of these solutions are going to scale, but at least I hope some of them will be like, some of them will. And like, let's try and do something about it. And, so yeah, we were like, on Zoom for like 6 months, once or twice a week. We knew we wanted to do something about carbon removal, but we didn't know what.
That's how Legion 44 came.
That's how Legion 44 came. And I guess, Fabian, maybe you can talk about like why we decided to do a film.
Well, I researched a little bit and I saw that you already had a movie or co-founded The Big Suck, which was a...
Yes. No, that is... Okay,
that was the original name of the film.
Yeah. All right.
This is a funny story. So that was the original... Before, you know, the rest of the crew were involved, and it was just sort of us and
it was
couple
a student project.
Yeah.
Like,
we worked it for, I think, a year and a half with a group of other students. And we thought, in terms of the film, we thought, okay, let's focus on doing, we were like, what initiative can we create around carbon removal? And then we honed in on a film because we realized one of the biggest issues with carbon removal is, at the time at least, was a messaging problem.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knew what it was. And if people did know about it, they were very skeptical. They really didn't have the full picture.
This future thing again.
What, sorry?
This future thing.
Yes, exactly.
Not out there.
It's like, oh, it's techno-optimist, which I get those criticisms. But so we thought, okay, a film is a great way to educate and also inspire people and try to push out a climate narrative, which is more hopeful and optimistic. And anyway, because the topic was around carbon removal, the first name that we came across was The Big Suck. And we loved that name. And we still love that name.
It was like, it's like you suck carbon out of the atmosphere and the problem sucks. And we thought it was,
quite controversial. Fun, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. Big annoying thing is getting...
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And it just, we thought, yes, that's the name. But, through some very heavy back and forth, it changed to Legion 44, which we understand. It has a much wider appeal, but that was the original name. Yeah, The Big Suck.
Well, what fascinates you guys about doing a movie? Like you said, you had the problem of doing all the small little actions and activist things. What fascinates about a movie? How does the story come across better in a movie than all the other ways you tried before?
I think storytelling is really powerful, and that's something that I experienced through. I mean, we both experienced through expeditions, because a lot of people that do expeditions come back and tell their stories, and then that incites smaller action. But we wanted to do that at a larger scale. Yeah. And I think a feature film is timeless. It's universal. It's not like a series that you watch and then you forget. It's something that can stick. And we didn't want to make a movie. To make a movie, we had, Fabian, you can speak to this, but we had a much bigger vision. Mm-hmm.
Essentially, if you look at like previous, in order to sort of catalyze people, and I'm not saying like, oh, we're going to orchestrate all these people, but just, you know, trying to do our little piece, movies have a really, really profound effect on sort of changing, elevating things in the public conscience, you know, elevating talking points, legitimizing topics. So for example, An Inconvenient Truth, you know, the original climate change documentary did a fantastic,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. Amazing. That documentary did an amazing job of really catalyzing climate change into the public mainstream.
Yeah.
Like from that point on, I remember as a kid growing up, you know, my parents suddenly started talking about climate change only after that film came out. That really helped solidify it. And films just have, it's films in themselves are amazing, but it's the after effects that they can have in influencing culture and action. And it's also sort of, if you think of it as like a leverage point, it's a really easy and quite a great leverage point to access in order to catalyze a lot of the effects you want to see after. You know, maybe if student clubs are going to be set up, or people are going to be doing, you know, speaking tours or activist workshops or whatever, you know, whatever people decide to do, instead of trying to organize all of that yourself, instead you can, you know, put a film out there and hopefully it has that impact, mm-hmm. so that people take it on with themselves and do their own thing with it. So that sort of, from the impact standpoint, makes a lot of sense.
Also, we do live in like this attention economy where there's like short forms of media. I think they're super effective also, but we wanted to do something that transcended beyond that and that just made a louder noise.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, something you could... You know, not a
something
YouTube,
you already not have
a,
seen or
yeah, or not a YouTube video, which I mean, I love YouTube so much, but not a YouTube video or a short or an event. We wanted something that could be watched again.
Thing,
like, yeah. Concerning. Yeah. And I do think that long form film is just the most powerful form to do that. But we never really imagined that we would get to make a feature film. At first, it was just the concept of it, because it was just Fabian, me, and a few other students, with I think we had like $10,000 budget.
Yeah, it was.
It's hard to make a Hollywood movie.
Yes, exactly.
An imagined $10,000 budget.
Yeah,
we didn't have the money in the account, but
that's how it started.
Well, starting with that, how do you reach out to people like Layla?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you wanna.
Well,
explain how it sort of grew from originally sort of small budget to...
Well, we said, you know, in order to get... I remember what it was. We were trying to, I think, research what's the cheapest camera we can buy. Like, we had no idea. And then Fabian's like, Paulina, hold, we need to make this movie global. Like, I'm not here to make a little movie. We're going to make a feature film. And I was like, Fabian, come on, like, don't be ridiculous. And he was like, Paulina, you have to be ridiculous. Like, you have to be, remember you?
Yeah, I remember that conversation. Like, yeah.
Cool, cool. And so then I was like, okay, I'm in. And so from that moment, we worked on getting in touch with all the carbon removal companies, solidifying relationships with them, a kind of talking the talk, you know, like, making it seem like we were more
established. Kind of faking it till you make it.
Yeah.
Didn't We were students at the time.
And you, I mean, then we got really lucky because after a year of building the storyboard, understanding the space, thinking about different ways in which it could be compelling, we got really lucky with the
Cat and
Peter. You can talk, you can say about that.
Yeah. So there's a media firm called Clinton's, which does this sort of competition and like about climate impact films. And so we submitted our pitch and there was first place, second place and third place. We were awarded third place, which means we didn't get any funds. However, I mean, they did actually help us with funds, but they gave us mentorship from
3 hours.
Yes.
It was 3 hours of mentorship from two big producers.
Yeah. And they both have very, very very impressive histories. Both of them, one of them, Peter, he directed an Oscar winning film, and Kat produced an Oscar winning film as well.
It's not Peter Jackson, right?
What, sorry?
Not Peter Jackson.
Peter Weber.
And so we were just very humbled that they would even take the time to speak with us. And with them, we developed the film more, developed the script and the idea more. And then they were telling us, look, you guys need a director. You cannot do this without a director.
I want to interrupt you. Yeah. This is what happened. We won this award after, you know, going in circles, speaking to so many people. And we finally got lucky, got to sit down with these two renowned filmmakers. Mm-hmm. Everyone else we had spoken to didn't have this much experience.
Yeah.
And they basically said, listen, love. Everything you're doing, like with a really thick British accent, listen, love, like everything you're doing is wrong.
Well, it's money, baby.
And I was like, oh, tear down my face. Like, what? They're like, everything you're doing is wrong. You're never going to make a movie this way. This is what you have to do. And we don't normally do this, but we like you guys and we're going to help you. And so they became our mentors and told us, like, you know, go ahead. You were saying the director.
Yeah, no, exactly. We were very lucky. I think they saw something in the project and we were very lucky to have their support throughout. And so they helped us, you know, come to the conclusion, right, we also definitely need a director. And that's when we saw some climate documentaries and we thought Layla would be perfect for this. Mm-hmm. And then you were the one that actually reached out originally.
We reached out to her reached out to Haroon Mehmedinovic, who's our cinematographer. This was 6 months before we won the award. And he's such a nice, open person. Most DPs wouldn't even take the call from two kids, but he got on the phone with us and we kind of built out a relationship with him. And then when we were ready to onboard a director, which was months after, he put us in touch with Layla, but we interviewed a lot of different directors and Layla obviously was just, you know, the one that understood the topic the best, the one that was willing. Yeah. And it helped that she had done a film that included DAC before.
Yeah, her previous film, Ice and Fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, like, not a lot of directors would be willing to take on two first-time producers.
It's a lot of risk, yeah.
Yeah. And so so they were like, well, we'll make a movie with you. Just go and raise the money.
Yeah.
And so we were really happy, but also incredibly stressed because it was like, you've done it, but now you have to do this.
Yeah. We spent maybe, I think, a year and a half fundraising the budget and we were studying at the same time as well. So I was in my third year.
I wasn't studying much.
She was in her second year. I was in my third and final year. I had to do my dissertation, all of my final exams at the same time. And I think we had honestly maybe like 5 to 6 pitching calls every single day.
Yeah.
So many potential investor calls. Honestly think we must have reached out to thousands of people. It was ridiculous how many emails. And she was the real part of this. She was a phenomenal. She was an absolute machine. Just until we finally managed to find some amazing supporters, some of which, you know, we're going to have hosted and we're going to see at the screening later today. But I mean, do you want to explain how we found our first sort of initial supporters for the film?
Our first supporters were like people that we actually knew from Antarctica that came in with like, we would prepare for these really, we were like, okay, we're going to raise $100,000 today.
Sure.
Yeah. Cause Layla said, you know, the budget was what? $2 million. We could make it for $2 million. Yeah. Ideally 2.7.
Uh-huh.
And so we would prepare for hours for these meetings. And these guys were like, okay, here's 5,000. And we were so excited.
Yeah, we were so excited. The first
but
money
it's we like, it was we just raised. Like, at first it was these little donations. Yeah. And then eventually we met Max and Benjamin on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And we were so, we both have ADHD. And so we're very intense. Like, I get so excited and then I get so like disillusioned.
From this side to this side.
Yeah. Which is maybe why we were like crazy enough to do this. But I remember I was like, this isn't going to work. Like Layla's going to abandon us. Like we haven't raised a penny. What are we going to do? And we had a call booked with a guy we met on LinkedIn. And we were like, it's not going to work. Like we've spoken to 100 people like this week. And we met Max and Ben, who have a carbon removal fund. And a week later, they committed to $700,000.
Well, there you go.
And yeah. So from then
we were
it was
over the moon. We were over the moon.
Yeah.
And then obviously after that, we had Dirk as well.
And a lot of, yeah.
And it kind of just snowballed
the
from
stone,
there.
Yeah,
stone. Yeah.
It's just that, but that first period was really tough. Honestly, it's in British terms, such a slog.
But super exciting too.
But very exciting.
Yeah.
Very
it's even better than if the film is done now and then you have the whole creation in front of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What was the most inspiring? Well, we traveled a lot, right?
Yeah.
Through the movie. What was the most inspiring or most beautiful sight you've seen? People-wise or nature-wise or anything you experienced shooting this movie?
I definitely mind pick, but do you want to go first?
You go first.
I have to say the coolest shoot we've ever been on and probably one of my favorite countries we traveled to.
Don't say Germany.
it was Germany.
This moment.
It was.
My view right now.
Such an honor.
No, I have to say, it's funny, it's not too far off flight actually.
I wonder if it's the same as...
I'm going to say Oman. Oman was phenomenally beautiful. It's just one of the most unique cultures I've ever seen. I never really sort of thought to travel to Oman before because it's not really got such a huge tourist profile. And I'm so happy. Well, yeah, exactly. It's not really sort of super widely advertised. And a lot of people go from the place to go to Dubai and the UAE. But honestly, going to Oman was phenomenal. The people are incredibly kind. The architecture, everything is capped. Everything has to be built within the original architectural style.
Cool.
And so the culture is really well preserved and it's just incredibly gorgeous being there. And you have like these beautiful rugged mountains. And then right next to it is this most insanely beautiful turquoise ocean with a nice beach. And it's the most like lush, salty, warm water. And the food was amazing as well. So Oman was just, definitely go there if you have the chance. It's one of the most beautiful countries I've been to. But yeah, what about you? What would you say?
I think Oman or Kenya.
Mm.
I think, I think all of them were so, so wonderful. Not the best country, but the most impressive to me was to see the Climeworks, I think Mammoth.
In Iceland, or in Switzerland,
yeah.
Where they're based.
I had never seen a DAC machine. So it was like, my bread and butter.
This is the future.
Yeah.
What you're looking in.
And I think meeting all of these entrepreneurs that we had read about and talked to and studied and all their solutions was also super, super exciting. We also had terrible bus rides from Paris all the way to Germany with like a team of 10 crew team members, sweaty, hot days, carrying gear. And so the juxtaposition between that and then you arrived to this most beautiful land-like places. Yeah. Liechtenstein was nice too.
I was going to say Liechtenstein was absolutely amazing. Yeah. The most beautiful views there as well. It was absolutely gorgeous.
But it's very small. You can just...
exactly.
But I think Kenya, which also was our first, shoot. So it was something really exciting about being on set for the first time.
It was also quite scary as well. I was so terrified of making any mistakes on that shoot because it was we were learning really everything for the first time when it came to being on set.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. And Kenya, we had like, you'd wake up and go out of your hotel room and there would just be like a draft, like two drafts just walking past you, just like 1 meter from you. And then these zebras
like in movies.
Gone. Yeah, it was phenomenal. Yeah. And then just sort of some, I think it was hippopotamuses not too far down in the water. So it was, yeah, that was really special.
How was your process then going from being a little depressed coming after the Antarctica trip to, and how's your mood now? Looking at the world, looking at the state of the world, looking at the possibilities we have. How did that, doing that movie, transform you guys into being, changed?
I think that when the film was first happening, our mood, I'll speak for myself. I was very elated. I was so excited because, again, like a reason we made this film is because there's a lack of emphasis on solutions. Yeah. And I think it's so exciting, even if these specific solutions aren't the ones that are going to scale, I hope some will, that we shed light on them. It's very important to talk about solutions. And we were doing that. And it was really, really exciting. But as we made this movie, we learned more about carbon removal. And even getting this movie out there is a challenge in and of itself. And so I'm really happy, but also there's such a long way to go. So it's this
mixture.
Of feeling like, yeah, something's been done, but now like, okay, how can this film be, how can we catalyze real tangible change through this film? How can we get it in front of the right people? How can we use it to pass legislation? How can we get it to be turned into curriculum and more? Because
are there already plans except those premieres you visited now to like show it to some, let's say, just governments or something like that?
There's like plans to, right now we're organizing all of that with a team, but there's plans to do university screenings, governmental screenings, and other initiatives that go beyond just seeing the movie, but, you know, creating partnerships and all of that. You can answer the question.
I think I sort of tailing off on that. I totally agree with what Paulina said. I think sort of similarly for me, I think going through, because this really started out with an obsession with carbon removal, like a real obsession, and this really strong drive to just try to do something instead of complaining, just try to get involved and start something. But through this process, I feel like, and through learning more about carbon removal
and growing up,
it's really given me sort of a broader perspective of the whole climate issue. And let's say like, you know, the whole environmental catastrophe we're living through right now, and has made me much more interested in the systemic aspect of all of this. You know, that you can deploy as many climate solutions as you want, but at the end of the day, you're just treating symptoms of
a deeper issue,
you know, a non-functioning economy. I mean, it's functioning some ways, not in all aspects. So sort of, I think from this point onwards, the work which I'm going to be focusing on is going to be much more around deeper holistic economic or social systems change. Depending, you know, however, what form that takes place. I know it sounds very vague, but it's just very interesting seeing how the way we structure our economy and our lives and our political system, like short-term politics and growth economics and all of these things, really are, in my opinion, the true cause of these issues. And it's just quite interesting to work on that sort of more niche area of climate action and sort of seeing what I could do there. But I think we both sort of feel very aligned on that.
It's
we thought, okay, carbon removal is amazing. We knew it's not a silver bullet by any means, but we were like, wow, this is amazing. We've got to scale this up, and it has to be scaled up. But it kind of made us interested in looking at the wider picture of things.
Yeah. And I think carbon removal has the power to attract people that might not necessarily be interested in climate change because it comes with money and it's tech. And it's, I think this point where a lot of different ideologies and types of people can come together. So
not excluding somebody, like,
yeah,
like, yeah, anything for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think at the beginning it was more about carbon removal because we thought it was interesting. And then through the process, it became about more the message that it carries, like let's focus on solutions and not, But yeah, it's not a silver bullet, and it's definitely very dangerous to think that it is.
Yeah.
There are much deeper issues. And also it's a bit, I don't know, what's the word? I'm trying to find the word in English. Not disappointing, but like no matter how good a film is on climate, it's never going to be, you know, the Barbie, the Gladiator, which is normal, right? And so
it's not the blockbuster.
And so I think it's about finding a really smart way to still make it seen by the most amount of people.
I think we felt like when the film was, we were so excited to create the film and get it finished, and we were so excited when it was finished. But I think we both sort of realized, like, okay, so much more has to be done now.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really sort of think, you know, we were like, we knew obviously had to do stuff, but as soon as it's done, it's like, it really settles in, like, okay, so much more has
to be
done.
Like, you have a hard drive with a film here, like, now what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
We went to our first premiere in New York, and it was the most wonderful feeling, like, all of these years of ideas and work, and it's our baby, and we definitely had our ups and downs, and
But speaking of the future, like, now the movie's out or will be out, what is the plan, and how can anybody who's listening to that right now get involved into the whole project, or the Legion? How can it be part of the Legion 44?
The Legion.
Fabian. Yeah, so we have, for this sort of last tale of the step of the documentary in terms of the real impact and distribution, we have some other, very fortunately, experts who've come in and are really facilitating with that process. And Layla's obviously heavily involved with leading a lot of these processes with the screenings. And so if you go to the website legion44.world, there's many different ways you can get involved. It depends who you are. If you're a student or you're a university, you're interested in doing university screenings or putting on a hackathon workshop or partnering on events, then you'll see options for you there on the website, or just get in contact with us. Also with corporations or small to medium businesses. Yeah. We're also doing lots of partnerships there.
So I can find a job there.
Yes, we will say that carbon removal jobs have been listed on the website as well if you're looking for a job. And educational resources are also on the website, or will be on the website soon enough.
Everything I need.
It should be like a good entry point.
Yeah, and there were so many
carbon removal.
Different carbon removal resources, because it's such a niche community. Mm. But if you look into it, there was already a website called carbon removal jobs. And then there's air miners, and there's carbon removal accelerators. And so we wanted to find a way to consolidate all of these efforts under one thing and use the film as this big Kickstarter. Basically use the film as this marketing machine for all of these actions that are happening around the space. And hopefully it's not just carbon removal, but eventually we'll turn into other solutions, and which are very much needed.
It's great. So get involved. Everybody's listening.
Please do.
Please get involved, everybody. And come to Nuremberg.
Legion is rising.
Sorry.
Also for Germans. This is an English podcast. You can also find German jobs.
By the way, two things. I love your city. It's so beautiful.
Very beautiful.
I want to stay longer. I'm definitely coming back. And second of all, because this is a German podcast, we were very surprised to find that a lot of the carbon removal industry is in Germany and in Switzerland. So I went to school in California, and I thought that was like the hub of it because a lot of the startups are there. It's like the tech center. But no, it's actually in Germany.
There's loads. Yeah. Like 40% of the cast in the film are German or Swiss, which is kind of funny.
Also, I forgot to say one thing I want to mention is, a lot of the carbon removal solutions that look really sexy, like DAC, and stuff, and like even like CCUS, etc. I thought was really exciting to see for the first time. Like that was but now looking back, when you look at the scalability of biochar, I think I want to change my answer to your question. At the moment, it was the most boring shoot, but now looking back, when I went to see Syncraft, Marcel Uber's plant facility, I mean, biochar is like 80% of all carbon removal credits, and it looks less sexy. It looks less, but it is like, in my opinion, the most scalable, the most feasible right now, the most cost effective. And so being able to go into a real facility that's actually producing carbon credits, that's actually profitable, was
amazing,
unimaginable.
And it's crazy. I think one of the, I totally agree with you. I think there's something there of that it's quite easy to be deceived by looks. There's this sort of this tech glamour. And obviously we don't have, you know, favorites. We're not going to pick winners or losers. I think everything just has to be done. And there's so much amazing research being done on all ends. But
biochar is my favorite. Sorry, I'm just kidding.
No bias here.
No bias.
But it is true. Like, there is these more, let's say, like, less, you know, techie or glam, you know, visually maybe glamorous. Yeah, they are doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and they shouldn't be overlooked at all, just because they might not have, like, you know, the, like, they're not out of like some Silicon Valley accelerator or something. Doesn't mean that they should be, they're not equally as important, if not like incredibly important now in the short term as they're scaling up. And sorry, one thing quick as well, the cool thing with Syncraft, what you're saying, is it is nuts to see. It's quite hard to visualize the carbon being removed from the atmosphere. Like, okay, you know, you get the process, but like, you don't really see it so much. But with Syncraft, we saw all of those bags.
Yeah, you see each one is 10
tons of sequestered carbon, which is a huge amount.
And they make energy. Yeah. They make energy as well. They don't only make carbon removal. They make energy. I think so, electricity. And I think
so. One of those win-win-win.
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
No, it was phenomenal. And I regret it, because I was like, when I went there for the first time, I was like, oh no, this isn't as interesting as the other shoots. And then obviously it was, now it's my favorite. So anyways.
So Legion 44 was a lot to see.
A lot to see.
Yes. Lots of information.
Yeah.
And well, for me, don't just look out in my backyard, because Dirk's work is already here in close to the city here. There are a lot of solutions which aren't seen yet. So maybe there's a Legion 44 number two on the way.
Definitely. It's so hard to capture everything, because there's so much important work, and it's not like, oh, we're filming what we like the most. It's that you physically just have to try to fit in as much as you can without overdoing it in a film with, you know, some variety. But there is so much amazing work being done with that, especially, you know, as I said, people like Dirk.
What is the 44? Is it 44 ways?
So 44 is the molar mass of CO2.
44.01
is technically the molar mass of CO2. And Legion is supposed to sort of resemble the
consolidation of
all
of all these stakeholders in the industry. Because we have investors in the film, we have entrepreneurs, we have students, we have researchers.
It's also important.
So it's like everyone has to come together and
cool. I have to say, I do still prefer the big suck.
maybe the next movie can go.
Yeah,
so you can work on that one. The word is out there.
Yeah, but yeah, we I get you. I don't know. Sorry,
we did it, bro. And then violins come in. No, but it's amazing. It's really, really cool to be at this point. We feel incredibly appreciative for all of the support that's got us here, because we were just some students,
you and know, back and in the you know day. What it was so fun to have an idea and build it together from a young age and just make it happen. It was like an adventure every day, and so I'm very grateful for that. Even if carbon removal doesn't scale, which it will, because you're all gonna join the Legion.
Well, that's a great word for the end. Thank you guys for coming by.
Thank you for having us.
For the listeners, that they can watch your movie already when it comes out. I don't know yet. At some point, or at least join the Legion on Legion44.world.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will be a movement, a big one.
Yeah.
That everybody can join in. So thank you guys for coming by.
Thank you so much.
To the Climate Neighbors, and I welcome you to the Climate Neighbors Union.
Howdy, neighbor.
Howdy, neighbors. And have a great one, and have a great premiere here
in Nuremberg. Thank you so much.
I'll see you later at the premiere.
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
Definitely.
We'll continue the conversation.
Hopefully.
It won't be recorded, but
maybe I'm invited. Maybe I'm wearing a microphone. We'll see. Thank you guys.
Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Farewell.